As June comes to a close, we want to share a story of Pride history, one you might remember if you were enjoying Milwaukee's nightlife 15 years ago. That's when Guerrilla Gay Bar was at its peak. Anonymous leaders would rally dozens to hundreds of LGBTQ people to take over a popular straight bar in Milwaukee. Michael Takash is board chairperson of the Wisconsin LGBTQ History Project, but he was also one of the main organizers for Guerrilla Gay Bar.
You know, Oak Creek was basically a farm town. It was not the suburban metropolis it is today. There was no IKEA. There was no movie theater. There was no Target. There was nothing. I mean, when we had McDonald's open, my school actually went on a field trip to see it. Like it was some kind of technological advancement. So when I was 15, I started going to Lacage, which was like the big dance club of the 80s in Milwaukee. My friend's sister was in the drag show. She got us in constantly. I mean, like there was no question asked. I was never ID'd, carded, nothing. I don't know if it was because I was young, blonde, and cute or what, but we would get in and then I would kind of get to see what adult nightlife looked like. And it was quite different. At that time, Lacage and 219 were probably the only gay bars in Milwaukee that would let straight people in comfortably and actually welcome them. And I know that at one point, because of the drag shows at those two bars, which were like epic productions unseen ever since, it was like full ensemble shows that went on for hours and had like all these like stagehands and, you know, special effects and like amazing costumes and all this stuff. So people would come just to see the shows. And like, if you were straight, it was no big deal to go to these bars to see the shows, but you probably wouldn't want to be seen going in them any other time. And it was not really the safest environment at Walker's Point. I remember people, you know, if you went to 219, which was at, of course, 219 South 2nd Street, you would not walk to Lacage, which was five blocks away, because it was dangerous. Like someone might drive by and, you know, throw something at you. Someone might drive by and yell things at you. People might get out of the car and chase you. There was real distinct homophobia in the air down there back then. And, you know, people got bashed and brutalized and robbed and all kinds of terrible things that are unthinkable today. You know, over the next 15 to 18 years, I mean, rave culture exploded and kind of competed for a while with the bars. And that was like the height of inclusivity because anyone could go to raves, no matter what color you were, no matter what gender you were, no matter what sexuality you had, everyone was welcome. And it was literally the more the merrier. That was like the apex, like the early 90s of inclusive nightlife. And after that, like when raves started trickling off and it was kind of just back, like approaching the millennium, most of the big dance clubs in Milwaukee started disappearing. And there was this polarization in nightlife, like towards this binary decision of like, are you going to a gay bar or a straight bar? And it was really weird. Because right around that same time was when a lot of the legacy gay bars started closing. Things were much more rigid then. I'm sure older millennials can tell you, like, if you went out and you went to a straight bar, like, you were constantly looking over your shoulder. You felt uncomfortable. You felt nervous. You felt like, you know, they might make fun of you or not serve you or ask you to leave. I don't know. Or if the business didn't, the other clients might. A rather enigmatic MySpace post went out calling for organizers to join this group that was going to be planning nightlife takeovers. And if you were interested, you were to send your information to an email address and explain why you wanted to be involved. So I reached out and I said, you know, this sounds fun. And at that point in my life, I had lived in Milwaukee for so long and like had just gotten so settled in my ways that I was just eager for something to change. And that year really brought the change. On Thursday at midnight, we would announce where we were going. The details would only be available on social media. We did not tell the bars ahead of time. There's a long myth that we were in cahoots with the bar owners. They knew we were coming, so it really wasn't a surprise, but that isn't true. I mean, we never told any bar we were coming, ever. We just showed up at 9:30 p.m. sharp on Friday night and just like poured into this bar. And ultimately, you know, over the course of that night, we showed the economic power of our dollars to bars that maybe had never really had gay crowds in before. Guerrilla Gay Bar was really born and inspired from this idea to disrupt the status quo, to like shatter expectations and like remix everything by taking all those rules and just throwing them out the window and getting a whole bunch of people together who otherwise would never be under the same roof. And it worked like magic in Milwaukee because I think Milwaukee was starving for something new at that time. They were starving for experience. And on a monthly basis, we went out every first Friday and took them on a tour of their own city. They were a tourist in their own town and got to be a little bit subversive in the process. It was a really wild, diverse group of people. I mean, we had tons of people of color who I had not seen in other bars in the city ever. We had trans women who would come out in droves because it was so safe and so fun. And, you know, maybe these are places they would have loved to have gone, but they wouldn't go alone. I mean, who can blame them? We'd have older people who like don't go clubbing anymore and feel kind of out of place. And something like this, it was, they'd come out every month. That'd be like their big night out. We tried to avoid small spaces that would be dangerous, you know, like where if people went and they really poured in, that it would create some kind of liability for the business. We didn't want that. So places like Landmark Lanes, Victor's, you know, places that were huge and well-known, but people didn't necessarily know them because they might not have ever been to them. Then we also chose the stereotypical straight bars like Stenny's, where, you know, people for years were afraid to go in there or even cross the street in front of Stenny's because they thought, you know, they're going to yell at me. They're going to make fun of me. They're going to, I don't know, rush me. I mean, there had been fights between Lacage and Stenny's customers going back to the 80s, like pretty bad ones, too. There was a famous case where some guys at Stenny's harassed some of the drag queens in the show. And one of them, who was like 6'6 and weighed 350 pounds, got into a rumble with the guys and beat the hell out of them. So there was kind of this history of tension between those bars. And, you know, we were able to show that that was then and this is now. I think that the customers thought it was cool and kind of fun to see like these strange shenanigans going on. And then when people would tell them what it was, you know, they would be like, oh, that's cool. And then I think in the back of their minds, they're like, wow, there's a lot of them, you know, like there's a whole lot of these people. And like, how did you get them all to come? The business's reactions ranged from fear. There were a few that, you know, we announced that we were coming there and then they would like post a comment or send us a message and be like, you know, we're kind of nervous about this. Like, we don't know why you chose us. What do we need to do? And we'd just be like, just have enough staff on hand for a busy, busy night. That's really all you need to do. It's not like people are going to come in there and break windows. At the end of the night, we would have like bar owners reaching out to us and saying, oh, hey, when can you come back? The only place we ever did twice was Victor's because that was the most famous, popular attended event we ever did. There were close to 400 people that showed up for the event in March of 2008. One, it's a dance club, so people could dance. Two, it was huge, so they didn't have to worry about being crowded. Three, it was on the east side, so it was kind of around other bars. And, you know, if it sucked, they could go somewhere else. But four, I think it was just that allure of Victor's, like the reputation, the brand of Victor's is just this like kind of edgy, kind of naughty, for lack of a better word, swingers club. Now, the reactions from some of the gay bars were not necessarily great. So we got criticized for taking money out of the community, which happens all the time. That's a fight that has gone back to the 70s in Milwaukee when some of the newer discos like Park Avenue would have gay nights on Sundays. And the gay bar owners were furious because they're like, why would you go there to a bar that only wants you on Sunday instead of supporting your own community? Well, they kind of did the same thing with us with Guerrilla Gay Bar. They were like, you know, you're taking money away from us. These people should be spending money at my bar. And our response was, well, if you offered the same, you know, experience, if you offered the same sensation, they would be. There was never a fight at one of our events. There was never a rejection of us. There was never anyone asked to leave because they were too drunk or because they were, you know, offending people. There was no like you know, lewd or lurid behavior. Unfortunately, I always hoped that something would break out that would be story worthy the next day. But people behaved themselves and they had just had a really good time in this huge mob of people that they felt unity with. And I think that that was also important at that moment in time, as all these legacy bars are closing, to feel like you're losing this, but you still have this. I did this for nearly 10 years on a monthly basis, committed every single first Friday. It's something you do like when you're younger and you have a lot of free time and you have a lot of energy left in you to be creative and clever and kind of intrusive at the same time. And I think that what happened is a lot of people just grew up and suddenly it just wasn't as fun to be, you know, this nightlife outlaw first Friday of every month. I think the legacy is that we were in this window of time where people were looking for fun and there was nothing fun to do. It was to be part of something at that moment in time. And to think about like the looks on people's faces when this mob of people come in and, you know, to see physical affection between same-sex people, to see trans women and men, you know, in a public place. I don't think that people see things like that. They might see one or two gay people with their straight friends. They may see people that they have no idea are on the LGBTQ spectrum just because it's so normal. It's so mainstream. And for a long time, we were heading in this mainstream direction with everything from, you know, marriage equality to trans rights to true equality that seems to have backflipped over the past 8 years. So, you know, maybe Gorilla Gay Bar is needed more than ever, but, you know, I think it's up to the next generation to figure out what that looks like, how it would make a difference. Most importantly, how to achieve that visibility and voice factor, because that's what drives change.
That was Wisconsin LGBTQ History Project Board Chairperson Michael Takash. He spoke with Lake Effect's Jimmy Gutierrez.